Radball Prospect Podcast. I'm Michael Halpern here with Ralph Lifshitz, and we had an interesting email this week. We got the Dynasty Guru. You know, they were checking out my website, imaginarybrickwall.com, my top 200. They were listening to the podcast, and I think they're interested in some cross promoting a little bit. So I don't know. There was confusion because I think they emailed both of us, but then they got back to you thinking maybe you were a part of my site, or I don't know. All I know is you set up a phone call with them on Saturday, right? You're gonna talk about it.
Yeah, we're gonna talk to them. I guess they just got some free promotion, so there you go. I threw you a bone, Dynasty Guru. Enjoy. You're now rocking with the number one fantasy baseball prospect podcast on iTunes.
Are we the number one fantasy prospect podcast? Is that even a thing? Was that a niche of a niche of a niche? That's like
it
there's
is.
Baseball, it's there's too- fantasy baseball, there's prospects, and then there's fantasy baseball prospects.
it's a niche within a niche within a niche. Or if you're one of the douchey people that I've worked with in the past, where like we're on a sales call and it makes me cringe every time they do it, they say niche. It's a niche.
It's a niche.
Isn't that
like a philosopher?
Like, I don't know. Yeah, exactly, right? That's what I was going to say. I'm like, you're in America, buddy. Say it like niche, okay? We butcher our French words over here, all right? Oh,
as French as we get over here is French fries, probably. That's it.
I call them freedom fries. You remember when there was a push for that after September 11th when, like, the French, I don't know, said something. I can't remember what it was. I was 19 and like not paying attention to that sort of thing.
I do remember they tried to call them freedom fries. And also, I think that was from like Great Depression. Back in the Great Depression, they called them, they had some, you know, American propaganda.
I thought
like
it was World War II when like they flipped, we saved those damn pansies in France from the Nazis.
Could be. I don't know. We're two history majors that maybe need to brush up on our history.
Yeah. Charles de Gaulle, that's all I know. Charles de Gaulle.
So I thought that was pretty cool. The Dynasty Guru, see what they're up to. They just started a podcast. I listened to it. It's excellent. Definitely check them out. There's your cross promotion right there. I don't need an agreement. I do it naturally, you know? I like my relationships to start natural. You know, I don't need these arranged marriages and shit like that.
You're not a traditionalist. You don't want an arranged. You don't want to be betrothed to the Dynasty Guru folks.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Are they attacking? Are they Trojan horsing us? Maybe.
I think I just happened. Potentially, they just Trojan horsed us. I have no idea.
They might have just Trojan horsed us right now.
Yeah, everyone just clicked off of our podcast. And they're like, oh yeah, the Dynasty Guru was one. I'm done with these two schmucks. But seriously, though, I want to thank all the listeners. And all the people that have helped, Gray, JB, everyone that's helped us along the way, Zencaster, everyone that's made this a successful...
I feel like I need to hit the Oscar music on you.
Really? I'm gonna wrap it up? But no, seriously. I mean, that was when Gray had mentioned that we were number one for fantasy baseball prospects. That was pretty cool because I hadn't imagined that would happen. Like you said, it's a niche within a niche within a niche, but it's still something. So... what do we got on the docket for today, Halp? What teams are we talking? What two-hour odyssey are we about to journey on?
We're moving to the West Coast. San Diego Padres, San Francisco Giants. Systems are about as opposite as you can get in every way, shape, and form. Mm-hmm. First off, on the Padres, I'm just starting off. Anderson Espinosa, to me, kind of might be the biggest prospect disparity between like real life and where I have him in fantasy personally. Because in real life, obviously, he's a great pitcher. He's got the stuff to be a top-of-the-rotation starter. but he's still super young. And even with the electric stuff, I was watching a bunch of his starts on YouTube, some of his later season starts. Mm-hmm. Guys were getting to the fastball. And I know they were saying they were going to – the reason why the numbers don't look that great because they weren't letting him throw the fastball as much. He was working on the other stuff. But I was watching. He was pumping those fastballs in, and they looked electric. And it looked, you know, like a superstar fastball, but single-A hitters were on it. And then he'd snap off those, you know, those curves and those changeups that flash plus and look really good. But again, they're still only flashing plus. You know, they're still very raw. But, you know, it's really a disparity when you see these prospect pitchers, even with tons of upside. And then I was watching a video just – it was a very, very mediocre lefty. I forgot who it was. I want to say J.A. Happ, but it wasn't Happ. I was just watching one of his rehab starts because I was scouting a hitter. And his stuff and his curveballs and stuff were just so much more crisp. And this was like a mediocre major league starter. It wasn't J.A. Happ. It was something worse. It was just a mediocre major league starter. I was like, damn, this it's really another level, just – the control, the command, and the consistency. But so back to what my original point, I got Espinoza like just at like around top 50. I think you're a pitcher like that. There's a lot of risk. A lot could go wrong. It's not like he just completely dominated and is just going to, you know, be up in the majors next year. So I don't know. I think he's a guy that I'd be a little more tentative for fantasy than in real life. And I just had a trade offer come up in my hometown league where I was trying to move Colby Allard. And the guy I was trading with personally just hated teenage high school pitchers. He just didn't value him that high. So I just thought that was interesting on where some of these teenage guys get valued.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. And I think, you know, you're totally spot on with Espinoza. You know, in terms of what his real life value is because of what the projection is, it's, you know, it's through the charts. I mean, you know, off the charts. I mean, you know, the guy is obviously incredibly talented. He's got that big fastball. He can ramp it up to the high 90s. He's touched triple digits on occasion. And that's pretty impressive, especially when you consider the kind of frame this kid has. And he's only 18 years old. Has the curve and the change of secondary stuff that flashes plus. You know, there aren't a whole lot of holes in his game. I mean, you know, even, you know, he's even young for A-ball, the level that he was at. So I think some of that numbers and stuff you do have to take with a grain of salt. But as you said, and I think you made a great point, you know, if you're ranking him out for fantasy and I'm running your team, I'm helping you run your team, he's not somebody that I'm going to be trading for, trying to, heavily invest in, unless it's the right deal and I'm getting another piece back that's going to help me more immediately. Or if you're in a total rebuild mode and, you know, obviously you're trading somebody whose future value isn't the same. That being said, he's probably a little higher for me. I think he's still going to be in my top, somewhere in 30 to 40 range. He'll be ranked somewhere in there. And I think a lot of it, too, for me is what his value is in the trade market. I'm in some leagues where, you know, people would you know, drop their pants to trade for Espinoza just because of what the hype is. I'm also in a lot of leagues with Red Sox fans that love Espinoza. But that said, I mean, I wouldn't trade Espinoza if I owned him for Drew Pomeranz. I'm not going to pull off that trade that Dombrowski did. I mean, yeah. I even dislike it in a 12-team head-to-head points league. Where you have an opportunity to win now and Pomeranz could, you know, potentially just give you that extra additional starter that you need or whatever. I wouldn't do it then. So, I think, you know, looking at the real life trade, that was awful. Yeah. If you own him, I'd hold him unless you get, you know, blown away on an offer. You know, the ceiling is huge with this kid, and that's what we'll see, I think, for a majority of these Padres prospects, especially the ones that my spirit animal, my favorite executive in baseball, AJ Preller, has brought in. He's brought in a lot of high upside guys with some question marks, whether it be age or injury and some of that sort of thing. But Espinoza is the best of the bunch. You know, I'm not one to necessarily invest in high school arms, but sometimes there's a position, a place of value where long term, you know, you can take that pick. Like, for example, one of my first year player drafts, I took Matt Manning at like 17th overall in a first year player draft. And it's because the value I felt was there. You know, it's a head to head league, pitching arms are big. And, you know, I saw other lesser pitchers going off the board and thought I should bag myself Manning now so I at least get one of these guys from this draft because this was a great crop, you know, obviously a high school arm. So, you know, I think it depends on the draft. It depends upon the situation. I'm not going to completely write off any style of player or anything like that. You know my position on small righties, which Espinoza is one of those too. So he's young. and he's a small righty, but sometimes the stuff is just, you know, through the roof.
He really does have superstar upside. I mean, you could watch his stuff on YouTube and see the guy looks like, you know, the next. He's ready in the, like, the Under Armour or Nike gear. Looks like the corporations are already fighting over, you know, who's going to be the sponsorship for him. He does. He looks like a star. There's no doubt. I see it. And you make a good point that, you know, depending on what league you're in, you kind of know, once you're in the league for a year or two, you kind of know the custom of the league. So if you know that a guy like that's going to have a lot of trade value, then for sure, don't only make it about, you know, your opinion. You have to definitely take into account who you could trade. Like I said before, my hometown league, they don't seem to value these far off guys as much, especially pitchers. And I agree with them. And it's 12 of us. It's only a 12 team league. So values kind of get pretty similar as opposed to maybe like a 30 team league where you could find guys, you know, teams will have huge different valuations. Not everyone's friends, you know, everyone's working on different things. So I do think depending on your league, you have to know which guys have value and which guys don't. Moving on to probably the most for redraft leagues. I was going to say, you know what? It's between Hunter Renfroe and Manuel Margot. People might prefer Margot. I prefer Renfroe long-term and redraft. Even though the biggest red flag, the 3.9% walk rate in AAA, 20% strikeout rate. Yes, triple slash look great. The homers look great. But when you get to those, you know, peripheral stats and you're seeing, you know, these polished major league pitchers who can hit their spots, you know, and throw their curveball consistently every time, it's possible he's going to get taken advantage of. Now, Margot also has only a 6.4% walk rate, but of course it comes with an 11% strikeout rate. But back to Renfroe, I love the power. I have him ranked ahead of Margot. He's in, I think, my top 30. I got him 29. He's proximity. Obviously, he's going from the get-go. I'm worried Major League Pitching could exploit him a little bit, no matter how much I love the power.
Yeah, and I think he's the kind of guy that you're probably going to see good power numbers from right from the get-go. The funny thing is, you know, even though he strikes out a decent amount and doesn't walk at all, which isn't a good combination, his minor league batting averages have been almost, across the board, other than, I think, what, one hiccup when he was initially called up at AA a couple years ago, right?
The averages have been good.
It's been 283 across about 2,000-plus minor league at-bats, somewhere in that range. So, I mean, he's been in the minors for a little bit. He's 24 years old.
Yeah.
He certainly paid his dues. You know, they played the clock game with him last year, and, you know, they only brought him and Margot up after El Paso had won the Triple A championship. So that's good. You know, they have the winning culture. They're trying to do it like the Mariners, who we'll talk about next week. That's one of their big focuses, is trying to, you know, create a winning culture throughout the minor leagues.
That's a good strategy. You know, the Yankees do that. The Yankees like having their guys play in the playoffs to know how to win. They do. They mention that a lot. They like doing that.
It happened with the Pawtucket Red Sox with, you know, Mookie and Xander and some other players as well, Jackie Bradley Jr. So that sort of core that's come up with the Red Sox, same thing. They were a very solid team. I think they won a championship as well. You know, if I'm wrong about that, I just forgot who wins AAA championships. Don't really pay attention to that. Too busy paying attention to players.
But anyway, you wouldn't be the only one who forgot who won the championship.
They do, even though they get rings. But, yeah. You know, with Renfroe, I think it's the big power. It's the fact that, you know, he's gonna be a stat caster stalwart. I mean, like a guy that's just gonna crush baseballs. I can't wait to see what his hard hit numbers are. I'm really interested to dig into his batted ball numbers and really get an idea, because he does make a lot of hard contact, hits, you know, a lot of hard line drives, you know, fly balls as well. So he profiles as the right hitter. It would be nice to see him with a little bit more approach, but you know, if he's a grip it or rip it kind of a guy, and maybe he's a 250 hitter and not the 283 hitter he was in the minors, I'm okay with that if he's a 25 to 30 homer guy. I mean, he has 30 homer pop in that bat for sure. I mean, you can go back to Gray's article. I linked to it in my Padres write-up. He had that nice gif of Renfroe, you know, golfing that home run to left field. It's like a low inside fastball or something, and he golfs the freaking thing, 400 feet to left field, you know, and puts it against the factory. So he's got serious pop. I think for this year, I'm all in on Renfroe over Margot. Long term, I do like Margot better. I think he is going to be a top of the order, run producing player, exciting, dynamic, offensive, top of the order type of player. I said similar things to Trey about Trey Turner last year. Turner has a little bit more power than Margot is. Turner's a better player than Margot is, in my opinion. But Margot is not too far behind. He's got 30 steal speed. He's got batting average. He's got a high BABIP kind of skill set. He can put the ball to all fields. He makes hard contact, hits a lot of hard line drives and hard ground balls. I think he's a 300 hitter in the making. He's not going to have huge on base percentages, but I think if he hits 300, it'll probably be somewhere around 350 to 360 range. He takes enough walks. But he's got that varied skill set. He's going to be an excellent leadoff hitter in the National League. So I do like Margot long term.
Agree with you on Margot. I mean, I still would have Renfroe long term, but I think they're close. And you said it all on Margot. I don't think there's much more to say on him. Kind of got that hit tool speed going. Mm-hmm. He probably has to change his swing a little bit if he wants to tap into more power, sure. Which is kind of always the risk, because then it's kind of going to be a different hitter. Sometimes it works out, take guys to the next level. And sometimes, you know, they struggle and then they end up scrapping it, or it could fuck up their mechanics for like a few months. So it's always a risk on how you want to do that. Mm. But yeah, so the reason why I prefer power, so I'm just going to give the edge to Renfroe. But I thought, you know, when you were talking about Renfroe, I was thinking I had Aaron Judge ahead of Renfroe. You know, these guys are all very close. That's why I'm bringing them up. I had Judge ahead of Renfroe just because I would take a little more strikeout with a better plate approach. And Judge walked a lot more. And of course, Judge was in the International League, Renfroe the PCL. But both their powers, I mean, I guess Judge has maybe more raw power just because he's a beast, but both of their raw power and power numbers are pretty equal. I think I'd prefer the patient plate approach than the hacker, especially in San Diego and Petco, even though Petco I know plays a little more neutral now than it used to. So I'm sticking with Judge. Are you you're a little more down on Judge than me, so you probably have Renfroe over him.
Shocking. You want the Yankee power hitter over the Padres player? Shocking, Halp. Nah. I'm really shocked. I'm sorry. I had to discount your opinion as a Yankee.
Well, you can't discount that because I'm lower on Glaber than most people.
Lower on Glaber than me, obviously, based on my videos where I'm like trying to talk Andy and the rest of the everybody else off the ledge that was like,
I'm completely objective. I mean, last year I had Gary Sanchez as top. Yeah, yeah. I really am objective though.
I feel I'm the same way with Red Sox players, and everyone gives me crap.
I've never given you crap for not being objective on a Red Sox player.
The only guy I really stick up for in the Red Sox, I don't even like Xander Bogaerts. I trashed him the other day, but I'm a big Rick Porcillo guy. I've stuck up for Porcillo. I did a video with Andy this week on him. I explained the tweaks that he's made as a pitcher that go beyond the numbers, trying to explain to people that sometimes there's stuff you got to actually look and see what they're doing on the baseball field, not just what all their numbers and profiles and everything else are.
YouTube scouting.
Exactly. You know, or just watching all of their starts because you're a fan. Well,
exactly. I was just to start this podcast off, I was going to start saying I'm ready for some baseball. I'm ready for some Yankees on the big screen and some MLIB TV, some minor league game. I'm ready to watch Willie on my laptop, you know, Cody Bellinger. I'm looking forward to that LA squad. Verdugo, it could be some fun games.
Oh, that triple A team, that OKC team is going to be a lot of fun. But we're getting off track. But what I want to say, back to your original point, I would bump up Renfroe a little bit over Judge. Renfroe will be ranked higher than Judge. Renfroe will probably be my pick, and you'll probably be involved in the staff picks for postseason awards with Razzball. It's always kind of a fun exercise. I'm usually totally wrong about most of them, but. I will be picking.
Did JFO sweep up on that this year? Credit to JFO. He dominated something, right?
JFO did really well in those awards, actually. He did.
Yeah, I think he won those awards. So props to JFO on taking down those Razzball awards. He killed it.
Let's not build JFO's ego up too much on this podcast.
It's all right. Anyway. We haven't talked about it in a little.
I'm gonna be taking Renfroe as my NL Rookie of the Year, I think.
Solid pick. Definitely solid pick.
Yeah, I just think the floor is there. And like I said, I like Margot more long-term. I think he can develop the power and go from there. But so I would take Renfroe over Judge, but it's very close. And I like Judge less than you, but I don't dislike Judge. And I'm hoping that, much like he did at AAA this year, he makes his adjustments and gets settled in New York and can finally be the player that we've all been dreaming on with the big power in Yankee Stadium for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah, I'll add in real life, I'm taking Margot. Because he's a plus defensive center fielder compared to a corner outfielder. So, like, sometimes we compare the real-life lists, you know, and defense gets taken into account a bit. In this case, I'm completely on board in real life. Margot, I'd have ranked higher just because of the plus D. Moving on to some pitching. Let's start with Cal Quantrill, even though it's arguable who the top pitching prospect is. I know you had Quantrill very high in your first-year player draft rankings. So what are you feeling on him?
Yeah, and I still like Quantrill, and I'm sure we're going to go into Adrian Morjan or Morjan.
Right. And exactly. He's the other competition for their top spot.
I love Morjan. We'll go into him a little bit more now. And it's funny, somebody called me out on the fact that I've bumped up Morjan to Specs in the Beach in my rankings over Kirilov and actually over Quantrill, who were both ranked ahead of him. I'm going to end up redoing my first year player draft rankings probably the week after my top 100 drops, which is going to be on the 22nd on my 35th birthday. I'm going to drop my top 100, top 200, whatever it might be.
Nice.
Still figuring out how I'm going to break that down, but I'm going to try to bang out a few extra systems over the next week. That way I can finally get these things over and done with. I got six left and I can't wait to be done. But
I'm so with you on being done on these team previews, but they're still not, even when we're done with this, there's still not baseball happening. So I think we're just using it as a scapegoat.
Yeah. So, you know, I've moved Morjan ahead of him, but I had Quantrill ranked eighth. This guy, when he was at Stanford, before we had the TJ, unfortunately, you know, a few starts into his sophomore year, this guy's freshman year of college was one of the best pitchers in the country, arguably the best. And, you know, we haven't seen him for a little bit. So, you know, it's a matter of, you know, what are we going to see? You know, is it going to be the guy that he was? Initial returns, I know that the ERA wasn't great, but, you know, the Ks and the walks weren't awful. You know, his peripheral numbers, the FIP, the XFIP, the fielding independent stuff looked good. You know, he's got a ton of upside here, and I'm really interested in owning Quantrill. I haven't been able to get him in any drafts. He's been going relatively high, but you know, he brings a good mix. He knows how to pitch. He's got the genes as well. Hopefully he's better than his father, Paul Quantrill, but you know, Paul Quantrill was still a decent pitcher in the major leagues.
Was his mom a softball player? We have to start investigating the other side of the gene pool.
We'll have to see. Hopefully his mom had a slider with some serious bite and could ramp the heater up into the upper 80s or something, whatever.
Hey, those softball players could pump heat. I watched some of that with the windmill delivery. Shit, I'm not taking away from them.
Yeah, so I like Quantrill, you know, but we have to see what he is. We really do have to see what he is. This is going to be a big year for him. I assume he's going to get a full season assignment. Maybe I'm being a little aggressive with that, but I would imagine he's going to get a full season assignment. I don't think we're going to see him in like short season or rookie ball again. I think we're probably going to see him in A ball.
Yeah, I think so too. It's kind of that, just kind of that guy who came back from Tommy John surgery. The stuff looked good. He had, you know, 11.2 strikeout per nine, 1.9 walk per nine, but the control and command, really more the command, just not quite there. He got hit around a little bit, but someone with his type of stuff, he hasn't pitched since freshman year of college, so there is some risk. There is some unknown.
Sophomore year, he made a few starts.
A full season, I mean. But yeah, you're right. He did go down in sophomore year. You're right. Yeah, but a full season since his freshman year. So huge unknown, but the stuff looked great. So I do like him.
And I like to take.
I guess let's go into Morjan, but there's another pitcher in their system, Chris Paddock, who he currently is down with Tommy John surgery. And I just thought it was interesting, like in prospect drafts, is he still available? You have the opportunity to go like take that Washington Nationals pick. They love scooping these pitchers who are highly ranked. It's the Tommy John, and then kind of get underrated. So I was looking at Paddock. I was like, I'm gonna go on Washington Nationals in some of my drafts where he's available, and I'm gonna wait because shit, what he did when he played before he obviously went down with the surgery. He had a 71-5 strikeout to walk rate in 42.1 in his pitch at single A. His curve, his changeup is like double plus.
Yeah.
He throws like low 90s heat with some solid movement, puts it on both sides of the plate. He's 6'4", 195. So there's definitely projection for more. Scouts were saying, I think I was reading MLB.com report, MLB Pipeline. Obviously, they do great stuff all for free. They're awesome over there. I was reading their report that, you know, most scouts think he's going to end up in the mid 90s, and with he's my fastball changeup special. I love those guys. I know you like those guys too. And shit, yeah. So I'm going to go Washington Nationals on him. I think I'm going to be taking Paddock and wait. I think he's worth the wait, and he's being forgotten about a little bit.
Yeah, and I owned Paddock all over the place last year. He was a guy that I was just jumping all over on the waiver wire and all these different dynasty leagues. I couldn't believe the absolute robbery that Preller pulled on Miami, on the Marlins, when they traded Paddock, who probably would have been their number one prospect in their system, had he still been in the Marlins system this year, regardless of TJ
not that high of an honor, but yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. But he still would have been the number one guy, and they traded him straight up for Fernando Rodney. So that tells you what the Marlins are doing and the type of stuff that Preller is doing. I don't think he had to lie about any reports or anything. But yeah, that double plus changeup is absurd. And his swing and miss stuff is great. I actually drafted him in the third round of the Raz 30. So I'm pick 25. So that was pick 85 I got him. And I ended up packaging him up with a couple other guys in order to, I have the Mets and I needed to secure my first base spot. Ended up getting Joey Votto, Bruce, and Cody Reed. And threw Mats, Paddock, and some other pitcher players back, some other minor leaguers back. So, yeah, you can get him even that late, even when you're in a draft with a guy who's written about Paddock, I think probably more than anybody. I was writing about Paddock while he was still with Miami before the trade, and then trade happened, and then this TJ happened. I mean, I've been sort of leading the charge on Paddock. I love him. I featured him in my write-up. He was a great steal by Preller. And just sort of shows you where the Padres system has been and the sort of things that they've been doing since they sort of unloaded all of the prospects that he didn't draft or add for talented veterans when they tried to compete for that small window. They then flipped those guys and turned a bunch of those guys into even better prospects than the guys they had before. So he's sort of built this system from the ground up, as we'll go into. He killed the J2 this year. One of those guys, probably a good segue for Adrian Morehan. What's your feeling on Morehan? Obviously, I love him, so I'm gonna wax poetic, but I want to know what the help thinks.
The help, you know what? Before I get into Morehan, I just had a thought on the Marlins when you mentioned the Marlins trade. The Marlins trade him, then he went down with Tommy John surgery, and then it just reminded me when the Yanks trade for Nathan Eovaldi. We thought we robbed them blind. We gave them like a year of Martin Prado, and then Eovaldi went down with Tommy John surgery. I think they might know on these medicals, I don't know. Maybe the returns aren't great, like you mentioned. So that probably goes into it, that I think their medicals on these guys might have been known to be risky. Because like a guy like Eovaldi, the common wisdom, there was some studies that Tommy John surgery lasts about 7 to 8 years.
Yeah.
So like a guy like Steven Matz, he had Tommy John surgery in 2010. All of a sudden, 7 years later, he's having some arm troubles now. I don't know. Really, seems like he's due for another one. You don't want to say that. Everyone's different, and who knows. But Eovaldi had the Tommy John about 7-8 years before the Yanks got him. Now he's done. So I don't know. It's interesting. Just made me think of the Tommy John thing.
Well thank God I traded Steven Matz with Paddock in that trade before you made that comment, and we blasted it onto the airwaves to all the other people in the Rats 30.
Yeah, your league is incestuous as hell. Everyone's listening to this, reading our stuff, asking our opinions. Everyone's working on the same shit.
Yeah, I feel like I'm managing a bunch of teams.
but back to Morehan, Silent J, obviously. It looks to me just like a really solid, polished teenager guy. He's really very young. Doesn't have like the huge stuff, but 3+ pitches he kind of projects as. I had him just outside my top 100. I probably could have ranked him similar to where I had like Ian Anderson, but I'm just a little more confident with Anderson. Morehan's a little bit more of an unknown, and I think the likely upside is more mid-rotation, good mid-rotation guy, maybe closer to a 2 than a 3 or 4, but I don't know if it's ace. I don't know if it's that ace upside. So I think he's like a safe teenage guy, similar to Braxton Garrett. I had him and Braxton Garrett right next to each other, like safe teenage guys. Of course, there's always projection for more. Who knows? Anyone could turn into a superstar. You see it all the time, but I just like him. I don't think they have like that awesome upside. Tell me why I'm underselling him.
I think you undersell Morehan a little bit, but it's tough. I mean, he's 17 years old, so it's pretty tough to sell that. But he's a lefty. He's already working in the low to mid-90s with a fastball as a 17-year-old left-handed pitcher. Has two different changeups. Throws that knuckle change with a late dive. He's got the other more traditional one with the sink and the run, which is in a curveball. He's got smooth mechanics, good arm, clean arm action when you watch him pitch. I love this kid. I think that there's a ton of projection still left with him, especially at 17 years old. I love the fact that he has a feel for not only one changeup, but two different changeups. He's got his off-speed stuff going. He's got an average breaking pitch already that he could probably work on. good, you know, good velocity in the fastball, you know, as he's working as a 17-year-old, you know, over here in the States in some of these strength and conditioning programs. You could even add a couple of ticks onto that. You know, I know he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's about 6'1", you know, 170 or whatever, but he's not teeny tiny either. And I think he's a guy that has some projection left. And the fact that he has his pitch ability plus the stuff already going for him, and he's left-handed, you know, he's uber talented. He's going to be, you know, over here. He's over here in the United States early enough that he's going to pick up good talents. I think people undersold, you know, Yadier Alvarez a little bit last year with the Dodgers, who I know is a different pitcher. But I think that Morhan could be sort of a cheaper version of that. Maybe the ceiling isn't as high as it is with Alvarez, but I still think that there is some substantial ceiling here. He was, I'm talking about my own picks in Raz 30. He was my first round pick at 25th overall in Raz 30. I was happy that he dropped to me. So I just continue to toot my own horn and build up the value of my own players. So help, don't screw that up for me. Don't screw that up for me, dude.
Such a sneaky move.
But I really do love him. I love Morhan. I mean, I ranked him super. I was ranking him higher than anybody in my first year.
I know you're just kidding. I think everyone realizes you're joking. But yeah, I think you make a good point that the unknown, that kind of mystery factor, might be dropping him a little bit. And so maybe you can get a little better value just because the unknown factor. And it happened with Alvarez as well, even though Alvarez was the flamethrower. But yeah, that is an interesting take. If you're trying to find value in the draft, you're trying to beat these, you know, 11, 19, 29 other psycho owners who are trying to get an angle. So maybe that's one angle. You take a shot on these guys.
Well, let me ask. I got one question before we move on.
Yeah.
Is he the top Cuban player in this past year's J2 class, this 2016 J2 class?
Hitter or pitcher?
Yeah. Just top player.
From Cuba? I think I do have him ranked as a top player. I got Ona after him. Yeah. I think I have him as my top. Yeah, I don't think I had anyone else over.
Yeah, Lazarito had all the hype.
Lazarito, you know. I had under too, though.
Yeah, same here. So I had Ona ahead of a Lazarito. So let's move on. Where are you going with this now?
And Morhan also got paid the most. I forgot his exact number, but he got paid, what, $16 million signing bonus? Maybe more. I forgot his. Maybe that was Alvarez, but whatever. He got the biggest signing bonus. I was going to.
Eight.
Was it only eight?
Yeah, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't
Ona. I thought Ona got seven and Morhan got like 11 or 12.
Okay, maybe that's what it was then. I don't remember signing bonuses.
Yeah, whatever. Should we look it up?
AJ Prowl's accountant? What's going on here?
All right, I was going to look it up, but fuck it. Anyone can look it up.
What, because my last name is Lifshitz? Are you making assumptions that I'm an accountant?
No, we all know you sell insurance.
Yeah, that's true.
It's been stated already. All right, I was going to put a damper on the podcast a little bit, curb the enthusiasm. Shout out to maybe the greatest comedy of all time. It's coming back. But talk about Javier Guerrero a little bit. Guy I kind of look at as kind of like a cautionary tale of these 19, 20-year-old shortstops who have like a solid season in A-ball, and all of a sudden he's ranked like top 20 in all these rankings. Like Guerrero was ranked in top 20 in most places. He had one good season in A-ball. He plays shortstop, and it wasn't a great season. He didn't destroy A-ball. Played solid, played a solid short, you know, and all of a sudden he's top 20. I don't know. I had him late. I had him in the 90s for me. I'm a little more conservative with these guys who are 19, 20, who have solid years but are not crazy. So I thought he's a good cautionary tale that dovetailed into our conversations on Gleyber Torres in the past and other, even Ahmad Rosario, guys who I like and are like top 10. They blow up on these main lists. Guerrero, and obviously there's other comps that do great in that area. This is not the only guy. But this is one of those guys that didn't work out. So he's dropping on all those main lists now. I don't think he's on there. He went from top 20 to completely off. He had a 33% strikeout rate at high A. He did it with less power, supposedly, just everything, you know, talking to the managers and stuff, the scouts who talked to these guys, supposedly everything was just out of whack. It was a horrible year. I just wanted to put the excitement on their system a little bit.
Just slanging some shit at Javier Guerra.
Yeah, bringing that down a notch a little. And also, just bringing up downside. There's some downside with these shortstops, that these pop-up shortstops who just fly up rankings.
I bought into him a little bit more because I had read great stuff about him on like Sox Prospects and some of these other things when he was in the Red Sox system. The trade was made, and we assumed that after Margot, he was the best piece that was going back toward the Padres. And as it would turn out, he's turned out to be the worst piece that's gone back over to the Padres, as Carlos Asuaje has really broken out. I even saw him listed as a top 10 second base prospect in all of the minors by MLB Pipeline. They do those positional lists, which are kind of interesting. I think that's something we'll probably do as we do our top 100 and go into the season. And we're looking for some content. Maybe we'll do some top 10 at positions. We've already sort of done that. Maybe we'll do it again. And then Logan Allen, who's been another player that went over in the Craig Kimbrel deal that's been relatively good for the Padres. But yeah, Guerra has been definitely far less than what we were sold, you know, in terms of the bill of goods. And I think it was those 14 homers in A-ball, and everyone thought, hey, it's a shortstop with pop, another good hitter coming out of the Red Sox system, another jewel that they uncovered. He goes to the Padres and doesn't look so good. So it'll be a big year for him. He could certainly rebound and sort of change those perspectives. But right now, he's looking a little bit like El Busto.
Yeah, I think I was butchering his name. Guerra? What do you say? How do you say it?
Guerra. Like Vita Guerrera. It's like,
I don't know why I keep putting an O on the end of it for some reason. I have no idea why.
Yeah, it's not Guerrero. It's
no, yeah, Javier Guerra. Whatever. Maybe I didn't like him enough to learn his name.
Gringo.
surprise kind of top 100 guy. Wasn't getting much love. Was in Keith Law's top 50. Fernando Tatis Jr. I traded for him in that 30-team league. I traded Bundy. I traded Bundy for Derek Fisher, Tatis Jr., and Payano, because, you know, I don't like my AL East pitchers. And Bundy's a huge injury risk. But he was like a secondary piece. He's kind of like a, I want to say like a Eloy Jimenez type, where goes from completely unranked to could be in the top 20 very quickly. Still raw, but has the bloodlines, obviously. You know, his dad was an excellent player for a while. He's a big dude, broad shoulders. They're saying he could stick it short, even though he's big. You're seeing these big shortstops do stick. Corey Seager, Correa, going back to, you know, Jeter and A-Rod. So big shortstops do stick. They don't all get moved off. There's not a ton of else to say out of him because he's very raw. But just looking at the raw tools, the bloodlines, he's got the potential to be a star. So I ranked him 100. It's a complete lotto ticket. But another great international signing by Preller. Yeah, I got to give it up.
It wasn't even a signing. He actually got Tatis in the James Shields trade.
Oh, that's right. Shit. Yeah, that's right.
Another aging veteran that the Padres dealt off for a...
Great trade. Just as good.
Law way overranked him, in my opinion. There's no reason he should be inside of anybody's top 50. There's
Law, a lot of crazy upside. Law just goes like a whisper of upside that Law loves that. Yeah, and he says that in his opening.
I don't even like read Keith Law because I think he's batshit crazy on a lot of prospects. But that's my own... You know, that's my own distaste for the mainstream prospect writers.
I disagree with everybody on rankings. And even my own rankings, I encourage people to disagree. Have your own opinions. That's the beauty of it. So, but I like his content. But yeah, you could throw some shanks. So.
He knows what he's doing. I'm not saying that in any regard. But there's a lot going on with his swing. If you watch him, you know, there's a hitch in there and there's some stuff he's got to work through. But the raw foundation baseline tools are excellent. He's got the bloodlines. It's always a little bit disappointing to realize that his dad was actually not the guy that was creating all those MS Paint pictures that he was famous for. Fernando Tatis, if you don't know what I'm talking about,
I don't.
Google Fernando Tatis Microsoft Paint. And there was somebody that was like pretending to be him and creating all these like baseball murals and stuff on Microsoft Paint. And they're like awful pictures. And for the longest time.
Selling them, I'm assuming?
No, they're just like posted online, just like as a goof. And
it
was
whatever.
An internet rumor. People thought they were real. And it turned out that my hopes and dreams were crashed when I found out that it was not the actual Fernando Tatis that was actually creating them. But that was
if you want a baseball player artist, Vernon Wells is the guy to go to, or his dad. I forgot.
His dad used to make like Spider-Man pictures of Vernon Wells climbing up the wall in Toronto. Wow.
Exactly.
What are we talking about? Anyway.
We were talking about Tatis. You know, I know who I want you to talk about, though, because you love this guy so much. You were talking to me before the podcast even started. That's how, first of all, me and Ralph, we talk for 20 minutes about prospects before we even start this. That's how much we love talking about this shit. But he was getting me excited for Mason Thompson, their third round pick this year. So let's hit them with a sleeper. Let's give him a sleeper.
All right. Well, let's hold on a second. Let me just check my updated Raz 30 big board, because we're finishing up the draft right now. My next pick is going to be this guy, and I'm one, two, three picks away. So that means that I'm definitely going to be able to draft him this night before all you, you hacks and scumbags can steal my pick. I'm really nice to my league mates.
AKA our listeners.
Exactly. My listeners, the people who joined Raz 30 and made it successful, all the people that I spend an inordinate amount of time chatting with on Slack. But Mason Thompson, he was a third-round pick. Big 6'6", 6'7". I've seen different reports in terms of his height. I guess it depends how big his shoes are, if he's wearing the Timberlands with the heels or not, George Costanza style. But 6'6", big righty, was a sort of a highly sought-after right-handed pitching prospect in high school. His sophomore year, he was in the U15 USA national team that took down Cuba in some tournament, won some gold medal. It seems like there's always a pitcher or a player that's you know, leading the charge in these U15 tournaments. It's always either a Cuban or an American, and they're either playing against the Cubans or the Americans and winning a gold medal.
Tyler O'Neill in some international tournament last year, he also hit a 3-run homer to beat Cuba in the finals. His big clutch homer.
Everybody just plays Cuba. So in a game against Cuba, as usual, Mason Thompson, you know, was a star. I think he threw like 8 innings, something like that. Don't quote me on that. Big win. His junior year, huge expectations, UCL injury, Tommy John surgery, doesn't pitch his junior year, doesn't pitch his senior year, was healthy going into the draft, so was doing some pre-draft workouts, bullpen, stuff like that. Really easy, repeatable athletic mechanics. He's an incredibly athletic kid, especially for a kid at 6'6". You know, hits mid-90s. Very easily can get it up there to 97 right now. He's got a developing change, developing curveball. But he's a guy in your first year player drafts that's totally off the radar. He was even off my radar until I really started digging into the Padres system about 3 weeks ago. And as I was digging, because these guys have so many prospects. I mean, really, we could probably do 2 podcasts on the amount of prospects the Padres have. Another high ceiling guy with a really low cost in these first-year player drafts. I've even had a few where he hasn't even been drafted or he's gone in the 4th or 5th round. He's going to go in the 6th round, about 150-something overall in Raz 30. So that just goes to show you. I didn't even do a write-up on him because, once again, there were so many prospects in the Padres system to talk about. But he's somebody to keep on your radar. Like I said, got to love the fact that he has those easy, repeatable mechanics. So he's going to throw strikes. That is the biggest indicator of whether someone's going to be able to repeat their, you know, if they're able to repeat their mechanics, they're going to be able to throw strikes, get the ball in the strike zone, have that control. It's just a matter of him developing that command and where it goes. But that's a really great baseline. The fact that he can easily ramp up in the 90s, the fact that he had this Tommy John surgery already isn't great. And he was so young when he had Tommy John surgery. So I guess after his second major league season, the fact that he's an 18-year-old now, you're going to want to try to trade him at that point. But definitely something you can add to your minors, especially in some of these deeper leagues. It's going to give you, I think, a very good return. And he was a steal for the Padres in the 3rd round.
Yeah, my favorite underrated pitcher, I'm not going to call him a sleeper because he's not really a sleeper, Eric Lauer, who's drafted 25th overall. Mm-hmm. I still like him a lot as just a guy who's kind of getting shit on these days. He's getting called like a 5th starter, but he dominated the MAC for all 3 years. So even though it's not the best college conference, he did it from the beginning when he was young. And his final season was just stupid. He had a 0.69 ERA, 0.74 whip, 125 to 28 strikeout to walk, and 104 innings pitched. So he didn't like pitch well in the Mid-American Conference. He just destroyed it as a freshman through his, you know, junior year. Showed very similar stuff when he came into pro ball. Doesn't have like the monster fastball. He doesn't have the, you know, the put-away breaking ball or the double plus changeup, but he throws all of them plus. He's got excellent control and command. He's got great pitchability. I think there's a little more projection and upside than people are giving him credit for. He's a 6'3 lefty. He's not like a beast. He doesn't look like, you know, Tyler O'Neill out there. He's not maxed out. There's some room for more. And you know that he got taken in the 1st round, 25th. So I don't necessarily think the Padres agree that he's like a number 5. I think he's a mid-rotation guy probably. And you know what? I think he could be better. I really like him. I think he's getting a little underrated just because, yeah, when you watch him, he doesn't throw 100 and he doesn't have like that nasty curve. But his body of work, I think this guy can pitch. I like him.
Yeah, and I had mentioned in my little blurb on him, you know, in my write-up on last Sunday, this guy's had great numbers dating back to high school. I mean, you know, he was a guy that probably could have gone in the first 6 or 7 rounds out of high school, then ended up going to, what was it, Kent State, correct? And led the nation ERA, you know, his junior year. You know, was under one, which is just absurd. He went in a crazy long scoreless streak. And, you know, numbers are good again in pro ball, right? They weren't too bad. So
Showed the same stuff.
Exactly. So why is he being branded as a fifth starter only? I think I maybe heard Longenhagen say it. I believe that the guys on Baseball America said the same thing. Why is this guy a fifth starter only? I mean, he's had great stuff.
The other organizations they talk to say he's a fifth starter. I mean, a lot of those prospect writers' opinions come from, not all of it, but, and they say, and obviously that's a feature, not a negative. A feature is a lot of them come from scouts and team executives. And you know what? You know, there's ulterior motives there. Who says everything they say is their deepest, you know, most honest thought on a player? I don't know.
He's got two above average offerings in the fastball and the slider. He's got average offerings in the curve and the change. He's got four pitches. He throws them all over the zone. He's a movement guy, so he can throw his pitches for strikes with good control and good command anywhere in the zone. Pitchability, really understands the art of pitching, which is the biggest thing. And he's got good mechanics. And, you know, he's got a rubber arm. So what's the drawback here? I mean, I don't know. I'm totally baffled by the fact that everyone just looks at him as a back end of the rotation pitcher when he looks like, how could he not have mid rotation upside? Looking at all the stuff on paper, all the stuff that he's done from a production standpoint across every level he's ever pitched in, going back to Little League, this kid was a phenomenal Little League player. I don't understand. It makes no sense. I feel like Andy Rooney. Why is it?
I'm happy you agree with me because I see the same exact thing. You want to go in on Michael Geddes a little bit? What are your thoughts on him? You know, I don't know what your thoughts are on Geddes.
Well, you know, with Geddes, I think, you know, obviously he's been the raw toolsy player that everyone's sort of talked about. The numbers have never really been there up until this season. He definitely made quite a significant improvement in terms of his bat to ball skills. His plate approach got a little bit bigger. But he does have plus speed. He's got plus raw power. You know, he stole 33 bases in 2016. Tapped into the power a little bit. He had 12 homers. Granted, 9 of them were Cal League aided. He hit 9 of his 12 homers in the Cal League. So I don't know how much we're going to buy into that. But I think there is some power there. It's not like he's a no-power guy. But there is still some serious swing and miss stuff. In his swing. I mean, he still misses a lot of pitches. But 2016 was a step in the right direction for Geddes, where I don't think that he had that so much in 2014, you know, abbreviated season, and then his first full year in 2015. But he was somebody that I kind of figured Preller was going to end up dealing because it didn't seem like his kind of guy. But they've made some adjustments in his swing and in his approach. He was taking more pitches, driving the ball more, got the bump from the Cal League. But there are baseline tools there. There are baseline skills there. I'm just not sure he's ever going to be a great hitter, but in spurts, he could be a productive player and potentially could be a major leaguer, which I'm not sure a year ago I would have said that about him. What do you think about Geddes?
Yeah, just to add on, I agree with everything you said, so I'm not going to repeat. Just to add to what you said, I think he was starting to get some hype during his great season, like the stats all you mentioned. And then in the Arizona Fall League, he hit 157 and struck out 40% of the time. So we talked about before that all the scouts matriculate to the Fall League and they're like, all right, let's see who's real. Let's see what's up. And Geddes flopped. So whether it was just a small stretch that was just extremely bad, who knows? But I think it did dampen the hype a little bit. You said it all. When he makes contact, he's got the tools to look like a star, but it's just a question of plate approach. He's still very, very raw. He's just still very, very
He's got to learn how to hit. And I mean, the one thing with the Arizona Fall League is it's a double A level. It's just typically what they say in terms of what the level of competition is. And he's a player that's never played above high A in the Cal League. So
there was a lot
I give the benefit of the doubt to guys like that. Same thing with like Eason Diaz. Like I give him the benefit of the doubt with any of that stuff with a Fall League because they haven't played in double A yet. You know,
you're so right. He was definitely a little young but you know, I think the pitching is really all over the place. So some guys are kind of, you know, Kopech didn't pitch above, you know, high A when he was in there, even though obviously his level he probably could have been in the major leagues. But I think there's guys of all levels, so you never know who he's hitting against. But another raw guy, Jorge Ona, we kind of brought him up when we were talking about the international signing bonus. He did sign for $7 million. His stock also a little down because, you know, there's Cuban guys that he hadn't played in a couple of years, I guess, through all the bullshit that comes with, you know, the immigration coming from Cuba and all that. which hopefully, you know, doesn't get worse these days. I don't know what the plan is on that. But to get away from that topic, basically word is he looked a little rusty in instructional league. So he had like an awesome swing in his Cuba from his YouTube videos in Cuba in there and, you know, national under 18s and stuff like that. But what the scouts saw when he came stateside, he looked a little rusty. Still very quick, still very powerful swing. I think he was just shaking the rust off. I like him a ton as a corner outfielding, just power hitting beast. I guess I'm a little more worried now that all the reports weren't great when he just came over, but I don't know. I think I got to stick with my gut and keep my feel. And not only my gut, I mean, San Diego paid him $7 million, so that's not nothing.
Yeah.
I think he could be a beast. Even though I didn't love the bad reports, you know?
Yeah. And he was a physical specimen. You know, this guy was super hyped coming out of another one of these teenage tournaments, the Pan American Games back in 2014. I believe he was the MVP of the tournament. In 8 games, he hit .636 with 4 homers and a .1364 slugging. That's right, not an OPS. His slugging was .1364. So he just destroyed that level. Really hasn't played much organized baseball since then. He's just been sort of working out and training and that sort of thing. And the reports and instructs were bad. That's what Baseball America was saying in the chat. There were a lot of questions on Ona because he didn't make the Padres top 10. And whoever had written it, you know, did a great job, but there were a lot of questions on Ona, and he was really down on him. Somebody said that they had heard him comp to Kirby Puckett, and the guy totally snapped back at him and was like, I think he's more like Dion Viciado. As somebody who's drafted Ona in some first-year player drafts over the last month or two, that was a little disheartening. But the one thing I'm going to come back to, and that is A.J. Preller has made his bones as an executive because he was the guy that was leading the charge in the international scouting department for the Texas Rangers. Look at the players the Texas Rangers have brought and bought over their J2 periods and their J2 classes over the last few years when Preller was there. You know, Nomar Mazara obviously being one of them. They've done a phenomenal job uncovering a lot of great prospects. That's what Preller is known for. I'm going to trust that Preller knew what he was getting into when he spent that amount of money on Ona.
People talk shit about Mazara when they got signed too. I remember they were saying he was an overpay. You know, exactly. When I was coming out with my ranking, he wasn't even ranked that high in the second in not obviously the obviously last year, everyone had him extremely high. But the year before that, they were still saying he got paid too much, blah. Now everyone came around. But I remember they were shitting on Mazara a little bit.
Yeah. You know, raw skills. It's his first time overseas. It was instructs. He was rusty. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what he can do. He's got the biggest tool, the biggest asset us fantasy baseball players are looking for, and that's raw, nasty, sticky power. He's got that in spades. I like it. I like Ona. I you know, let people discount him if they're reading Baseball America. Let him drop to me late in the first round, early in the second round, and I'll gladly scoop him up. You should do the same.
Hell yeah. Another guy we should mention, Josh Naylor, former 12th overall pick in the draft. Still, basically, still the same guy that was drafted. Hasn't really gotten better or worse. Just got the raw power. He's kind of focused on his hit tool early. He's not really worried about jacking homers, which is fine. But could be a decent long-term spec. Again, hasn't gotten better, but he's still got those same tools. Quick, sweet lefty swing, powerful. Definitely projection for the homer totals to start getting better once he starts focusing on that a little more. He's just trying to kind of hit the ball, which is fine. That's a completely valid development strategy. Dominic Smith looks like it's going to work for him. He's been blowing up. I love Dominic once I was looking into him. I didn't even talk him up that much on the Mets podcast, but after looking what he did in the second half of the year, he hit like .350, .410 on base percentage, just 10 homers and 6 games. Dominic Smith, I think, is sneakily underrated. I don't know why I'm going back to the Mets podcast. I feel like I didn't talk him up enough, but yeah, Naylor, someone I think should be mentioned. Do you want to talk about Naylor, Jacob?
Yeah, Naylor.
Too many guys. Yeah, to go into who you want.
I'll go into a few guys, but, you know, definitely one guy I want to talk about is you know, Naylor. You know, he had put on that almost like, I think, like a week before he was acquired by the Padres. He was in the Futures game, put on an absolute show in batting practice, just crushing baseballs out of Petco Park left and right. They said that he was one of the most impressive batting practices during the Futures game, so the power is there. I don't know if Preller was watching that and said, I need to acquire this kid. let's trade Andrew Cashner and then lie about Colin Ray's arm injury and see what else we can get.
First of all, forget about the promotion we gave the Dynasty Guru. Preller is going to be shit. He's getting pumped up on this.
Dude, one. I love Preller. Anyone's read my writing, anyone that read my Padres write-up, Preller is probably my favorite executive in baseball right now. I love him. Hmm. If he was in your Dynasty League, I wouldn't trade with him. And I think we're going through the reasons why. And we haven't even really brought up the fact that he probably has pictures of Dave Dombrowski in women's underpants and high heels.
I hope for Dombrowski's sake, honestly.
There's got to be something going on there. But yeah, but Naylor, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the power is there.
No pun intended.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. He smells like maple syrup. He's another stinking Canadian like Tyler O'Neill. They're going to have a damn good what the hell is that stupid World Baseball Classic team in 5 years. Joey Votto can play until he's 42. They're going to have the best World Baseball Classic team they've had in a long time. If I can bring up another player, I wanted to mention Carlos Asuaje. And, another guy that was acquired in that Manuel Margot, Craig Kimbrel trade. And he's had a huge breakout year, put up phenomenal numbers in AAA. And he's worked himself into a position to potentially be in the mix for some starts at second base or be a super utility guy for the Padres. I've heard some Ben Zubers comps, just in terms of a guy that kind of brings an all-around approach and could be a utility player. A lot of people liken him to sort of a poor man's Dustin Pedroia. He's a small guy who gets a lot of leverage out of his swing, has a lot of pop, more pop than you expect. He's got a little bit more speed than you expect. He's a good all-around player, good hit tool, has really developed it. He's 24 years old, so he's definitely made ready for the major league, can play a little outfield. Plays second base and third base. Second base is really his natural position. So I guess it's a matter of whether Spangenberg or Ryan Schimpf or whoever it is, if he ends up beating him out. But he has some versatility, slash 321, 378, 473 with 9 homers and 10 steals this year with AAA El Paso. So that gives you an idea of the kind of hitter Asuaje was this last year. I'm really excited to see what he is, and he's somebody that you can get for a relatively cheap investment in a lot of dynasty leagues.
Austin Allen's a guy I want to bring up at the end here real fast. Just that first catcher gets no – I haven't heard his name mentioned anywhere, really. Super underrated. But whether or not he sticks to defense, who knows. But the bat, it projects to hit for power and average. And the numbers are solid in – I think he was low A, double A this year maybe. But just a guy that – a really deep underrated catcher sleeper, if he could stick at the position, who knows. You ready? You ready for some San Francisco Giants? Ready for the next system?
Let me drop three names on you. I feel like we have to mention Luis Urias, 19-year-old, and he's going to be in Double A this year. But I think he actually won the Cal League batting title. It hit .330 in the Cal League this year. Just a phenomenal player. Gets a lot of Placido Polanco comps thrown around, where he doesn't have a ton of power or a ton of speed, but he has a phenomenal hit tool. Could be a perennial 300 hitter and could be up in the major leagues even at 20 years old next year.
He had a 37-44 strikeout to walk ratio in 100 something games. So this is absurd hit tool.
Absurd hit tool. Another guy I want to mention that's a good arm, just because the system is so deep. Jacob Nix, another guy they got in the third round of the 2015 draft. Mid-90s fastball, high 70s, 12-6 curveball. Nice changeup. Throws all of them for strikes. Probably not all that different from Mason Thompson, maybe with a little bit less of a ceiling. And then another guy that they robbed, we should mention their Rule 5 draft this year. They had the first three picks in the draft. They took 4 or 5 guys. It's the first time that's ever happened. Preller went all out and traded for these guys.
There are a lot of high upside guys, though. He took Louis Torrens from the Yanks. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep him. I mean, how the hell is he going to keep him?
They're going to put him on the major league roster. Alan Cordoba is the one I wanted to mention. He's a guy that they stole from the Cardinals organization, was the MVP of the Gulf Coast League in 2015. Follow that up by winning the batting title in the Appy League with a .362 average. He's a very good defensive player. I wouldn't be shocked if he's on the bench and he's their utility guy, one of their utility guys, or even starting for the Padres.
I honestly kind of find that kind of silly. The whole point is, you could take a guy if you think they could actually be in the major league roster. It's not so you could take them even though they're not ready and just you tank. It's kind of not what the rule is about. I guess it's a Preller type of – you love his sneaky style. It's kind of like getting around – it's not the point of the rule. It's not the intent of the rule. Even though by the letter of the law, it's allowed. You could stick anyone – so Torrens, he's going to ruin a year of development for Torrens, or I guess they're going to try to you know, I guess who knows, maybe it can help. I don't know. There's no right way to develop 100%, I guess, but I don't know. I don't like it. It seems a little shady to me, but fuck it. It's allowed by the rules. So
if they can find a way around it and get him some minor league at bats, I'm sure they will as well. Cordoba was a relatively advanced guy though. I mean, the numbers that he's been putting up in these lower A leagues, I mean, he was probably only a step away to begin with at 21.
Yeah, we might as well.
Cordoba is the only one that I'm really focusing on from that Rule 5 class. But
I guess now that we're rounding out the whole system, Louis Almanzar, kind of that classic toolsy international signing, up the middle guy. And Buddy Reed, the guy who got a lot of hype in his early years of college, but never kind of didn't have that junior year breakout. Usually you like to see that, you know, these college guys, they have their biggest year, their junior year, they dominate. Didn't really have it, but still a toolsy college player. Still raw. You never know. They scooped him in the second round. So, yeah.
Yeah. And Almanzar is probably the top player. He's a 16-year-old top player coming out of the Dominican Republic. I wrote about him a lot in my J2 previews and stuff like that. You can go back and check those out. Another guy from that they signed, and it's this huge J2 class they had, is I'm going to butcher this first name. Jayson Rosario, another guy outfielder worth taking a look into. And then first-round pick for him, Hudson Sanchez. He's known as Hudson Potts. I want to mention that. So if you're looking for that first-year pick, that first-year player, from this draft under Hudson Sanchez, his name is Hudson Potts now. Something with his mother. They changed his name. So just be cognizant of that. I know that our loyal listener, big fan of the show, Clint, had mentioned that. He's like, why can't I find Hudson Sanchez in the Fantrax database? And I said it's because he changed his name. It's Hudson Potts.
There you go. Yeah, usually – all right, so we're moving into the Giants now, San Francisco Giants. Usually when we move into the second system, there's like a few really exciting guys at the top. You know, it's like a jolt of energy back into the podcast, but it's just not the case here. I will start with my fan favorite, a personal favorite just of mine, just because, you know, through my rankings, Heath Quinn. I do my pre-draft rankings. I was scoping everything out. I had him as a sleeper before the draft went down, just – I didn't understand. He was being underranked everywhere. I guess he's a corner outfield guy, so I get it for real life a little bit. But still, and he wasn't at a major conference. So to me, I was like, hey, if I'm looking for an underrated guy, you kind of have to find, some reasons why he gets dinged. So he got dinged for that. But when you watch him, he's got a sneakily athletic swing. He's not like a stiff non-athlete guy. He's got huge power, and he dominated the Southern Conference again as a freshman. So it's not like it was just when he got older against weaker competition. Even younger, you know, he did his thing. And then his junior year, he hit 21 homers, had a 1.134 OPS, went right into pro ball, 9 homers in 54 games at low A with a 997 OPS. I think he's got excellent bat speed. I think he's got a good swing. I think he's athletic. He's got huge power. I really like him a ton. I wish San Francisco did not draft him because that ballpark is just, you know, it's one thing taking a major league player in their ballpark when you've already seen their production. But with the inherent risk of prospects already, plus going into like a huge pitcher's park, it is a little annoying, I'm going to admit. But I got to respect San Francisco's draft game. They're one of the best at it. And they scooped Quinn in the third. And they got another guy I loved. I wasn't the only one who loved him. A lot of people thought he was going to be a first-round pick. Brian Reynolds, they got him in the second. So they're sweeping up. He's my favorite guy, and the one I have ranked the highest. I think most lists will have Tyler Beede above him, but he's my top guy. Quinn is my top guy in their system. I like
him. Yeah, I don't know if I can go that ballsy yet and rank Quinn as the number one guy in their system, but I like Quinn. I had him 10th overall in my first-year player draft ranking, so obviously I like Quinn a lot. I think you hit the nail on the head. You're Mr. Heath Quinn. This was like your Harrison Bader, Willie Calhoun.
Yeah, like last year I had Willie Calhoun. I had my top 40, Bader in my top 50. I like those guys better. I have Quinn like 85. But yeah, and actually Quinn, I didn't do pre-draft rankings last year. Those guys I had like pro debut breakouts. But yeah, Quinn I love because it was like my first pre-draft ranking. And he dominated in pro ball, so I'm personally really excited about him. And I think he's legit, too. It's not just because I like him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the other guy that they obviously took in the second round because they didn't have a first-round pick this year because of the Cueto signing, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
They definitely probably had to give up something for the Cueto signing.
It was him
or
Samardzija. But either way, their first you know, pick was Brian Reynolds. Got really lucky that he dropped to him. Switch hitter was the best hitter on the Vanderbilt team last year. And we'll see what he can do in pro ball. In a lot of ways, I've likened him to Hunter Renfro. The power isn't the same, but he's a guy that has his strikeouts, doesn't walk all that much, but does have a good hit tool. A little bit less power than Renfro, though, but he does have some pop. So he could be an interesting one as he develops, especially if he can develop a little bit more approach, you know, here in pro ball. Well, you want to get into Beta a little bit? You want me to jump into young Beta?
I was gonna say Beed should be, yeah, real fast on Brian Reynolds. I kind of think, I just want to throw out there, I think he's gonna be like a poor man's Ian Happ, you know, without the second base eligibility, kind of a similar hitter to Happ.
Or but speed.
Yeah, I was good, yeah, with a little speed as well. But I was gonna transition to into Beed. I was gonna say Beta, he should be like your spirit prospect. You know, Ralph, I don't know if you know, Ralph was a rapper growing up in those Boston hood. B's got his rap game going, so I feel like, I don't know, you guys should be a simpatico.
We're kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually worked out I've mentioned this in the main podcast, I think the first time I was on. But he actually worked out at the same gym as me locally. So I know people that know people that know Tyler Beed. So yeah, I mean the kid was a huge prospect out of high school too. Went to Lawrence Academy up here, which is a super silver spoon, ritzy, old money kind of prep school that's had, like, you know, governors and senators dating back to the 1700s.
Scoff at that new money.
Yeah, this is no nouveau riche. This is that old money, you know, like, you know, they don't even have air conditioning in their houses because it would, like, you know, it would compromise the structure and historical value of the buildings that they live in. You know, all their homes are insured by Chubb, those kind of people. So he went to Lawrence Academy. He was drafted in the first round. He was a two-time first-round draft pick. Went to Vanderbilt, set the world on fire. Was a hard thrower there, kind of a, you know, a big stuff guy. You know, jammed it in there, and that sort of went away the further he went into pro ball. 2015 was a really down year. He lost velocity in his fastball. He was working in the low 90s. This year the velocity was back up. He's back challenging hitters again, and the numbers showed it. And he took a huge step forward. That last year he definitely wasn't the top player in their system. In my opinion, just based on proximity and upside, you know, he's probably still a mid-rotation guy. I know a lot of people say number four starter, so he's not quite a five-starter or a mid-rotation guy, but to me, he's like a three-starter. That's what his upside is. But, you know, he's not the king pitchability guy that these Giants prospects typically are, and we'll probably go into a few of them, but he mixes a bunch of different pitches. He's got, you know, the above average change. He's got a few different variations of his two seamer, including he throws it as a cutter, throws it also as a sinker. So he gets a lot of ground balls. You know, he's got a very mixed, you know, variety in terms of the repertoire. So he does keep hitters off balance. And I think that's probably his greatest asset, in addition to obviously being able to pitch in that superior pitching environment in San Francisco and just other, you know, outside of the two worst ballparks in baseball, they have a lot of big visiting ballparks as well that they're go-to with San Diego and then Los Angeles. But San Francisco for his home games, I think, is going to help him. And I think Beed is just, you know, a solid player to fill out your fantasy rotation. But he's not somebody I'd be clamoring, you know, or you know, run into the waiver wire if he's available to pick up in like a 12-team league. He's just sort of a blah mid-rotation guy, maybe with a little bit of caper nine upside, but not a ton.
Yeah, I think you said it, that AT&T Park is kind of his biggest selling point for even, like, I have him as a ground ball type pitcher, has some control command issues, so it's not like he's a you know, an artist on the mound. And his fastball ticked up at the end of the year, and his last 45.2 innings pitched, he did have a 1.58 ERA with a 51-21 strikeout to walk ratio. So you saw it, the stuff ticked up and it came in the numbers. If he was not going to AT&T Park or he was like in the AL East, I really wouldn't give him the time of day. But these guys in San Francisco, even these mediocre guys, they play off big time. So, yeah, that I like him as a selling point there for sure. Another guy I'm kind of mediocre. I feel like I wish I was exciting on more guys. I started with my most excited guy. You know, Christian Arroyo, I think he's going to end up at third. He was a guy that was on top 100s that I did not rank high in fantasy just because he's kind of like a hit tool first, third baseman guy. You know, I don't know. Are you more excited about him than me? I'm just not that pumped on him.
I was last year. My first top 100 that I put out almost a year ago now, I had him maybe about 78 or 85, somewhere in all that right range. I probably shouldn't have even. I mean, he's hit too long.
It's not that big.
Yeah, there's not a lot of power here. There's not a lot of speed. There's not a lot to really get excited about. he's seen some comps. This is what I mentioned in my article, you know, Martin Prado and the guy he may end up replacing for a few years, Matt Duffy, who's now with the Rays. That, you know, Giants traded him away last year in that Matt Moore deal. He's just sort of like a boring hit tool guy that isn't going to have, you know, zero homers, but it's probably not going to be more than like 10 or 11 in the full season. He's not really going to steal a lot of bases. Super ground ball heavy approach, 50% ground ball ratio. He's somebody I'm not even interested in outside of like 18 plus team leagues. Just, he's a single and doubles hitter with, you know, with little speed. So that's not somebody I love, but I think he's, you know, potentially a 280, 300 hitter in his prime. Not really all that exciting, but that's kind of like, that's the phrase we're going to keep on repeating as we talk about these Giants prospects. Not that exciting.
So in that article we talked about earlier, last offseason, that I wrote the sleeper article where I wrote about Willie Calhoun and Bader, one of the commenters, Baltimore on, real cool guy, he mentioned Chris Shaw that year as someone, even though Chris Shaw was in the first round. I was trying to find non-first-round sleepers. Chris Shaw was a first-round pick, but 31st overall. And he did have a nice little full-season debut. Wasn't great just because when he got to Double-A, I think he doesn't have elite bat speed, so he got exploited a bit, but huge whip power. He hit, like I mentioned, his pro debut, he hit 12 homers, so it was in low A. So it was kind of a guy who did it right off the bat, went to high A this year, hit 21 homers between high A and double A. Strikeout numbers aren't great, but they're not terrible. And I think the biggest hope here is with Brandon Belt locked up in San Fran, that they use him as a trade chip. And he gets out of that ballpark. I think out of everyone, he's got some trade hope. Are you high on Shaw, low on Shaw? I know opinions vary on him.
Yeah, I'm a little bit lower on Shaw than a lot of people. He's another local guy. He's actually from Lexington, Massachusetts, which is a little bit further away from me than Tyler Beede's from, which is Auburn. By the way, Tyler Beede, the high school in Tyler Beede's town that he did not attend, is in the has a Bed Bath & Beyond that's like abuts the high school. Like, from the football field, you're looking into the window of a Bed Bath & Beyond. It's not a joke. It's serious.
That's how I believe you.
I had to bring that up. So if you want to look up Auburn, Massachusetts High School, zoom in on it on Google Maps, look at it. It's hilarious. But Shaw's another local guy. Went to Boston College. Was a teammate of Mets prospect Justin Dunn a couple years ago. Yeah, he's a power-only guy, you know. Doesn't know how to take a walk. I think he's probably going to end up being a platoon bat. It seems like the opinions really vary on him in terms of what his ultimate projection and ceiling are. So people think he's a middle of the order power hitter. I think he's a lot like AJ Reed from the sense that it's leverage and brute strength that he hits power with. It's not a quick bat, as you mentioned. So he's not a bat speed guy. But I think he just ends up getting exploited because of the bat speed at the upper levels. Probably strikes out a little bit more and ends up as a platoon option on whatever major league roster he ends up on. Then again, if he ends up in Colorado, that may all change, and we may all fall in love with him.
Of course.
So Colorado, try to trade for one of these middling first base prospects that people own and make us happy and actually develop a first baseman. But that's another story. But lefty power hitter, very pull-heavy approach. I don't see him as anything more than a 240, 250, maybe 260 in his best season hitter with 20, 25 bombs.
I think Dylan Davis has got very similar in their system. Just a... you know, raw power, leverage kind of power hitter, corner outfielder, strikes out a little bit, but has a ton of power. San Fran could use some power. So they have a few pure power bats coming up. And Heath Quinn, who I like the most. Heath Quinn might get lumped in with these guys also from regular list, but I really think he's a notch above. I truly do. Well, time will only tell how that goes. You have any guys you're excited about at the end here you want to talk about? Because
I want to mention a player that I think has some redraft probably more as a streamer, or if you're in like a 16 or an 18 team league, or, you know, some of these NFBC leagues where, you know, you can't make any waiver moves or any trades. You got to sort of draft and draft like a 40 man roster, and you're looking for a back end innings eater who has a shot at the rotation. And this is a guy that had a pretty nice debut with the Giants last year. That's Ty Block. He's a 26-year-old lefty, you know, a pitchability guy. Can, you know, pitch a lot of innings, has never really been hurt. Out-dueled Clayton Kershaw, I believe, in the last day of the season last year to get the Giants into the playoffs. So he already had a big start there. But he's somebody whose stuff took a tick up last year because he added a few ticks to the fastball, but he also really changed and focused on the sequencing. where he was throwing pitches, just through his advanced approach to pitching in general. And he tightened the spin in his curveball as well. So I think those are all nice things. He's somebody that looks as like sort of a back end of the rotation starter. He's also going to be, you know, a lefty starter in the best left-handed pitching park in baseball in AT&T on a relatively good team. So I think he's somebody that could be kind of sneaky value the way Chris Heston was a few years ago. Obviously, he wasn't a lefty, but I think Block could be the same thing. He's not going to help you in Ks at all. He might actually hurt you. But he's somebody that's going to really baseline your ratios, really help you out there. So if you're in some of these deeper leagues, I think Block is definitely somebody to take a look at. Anybody else you want to touch on?
I mean, I guess Sandro Fabian's a guy that we should mention. Yeah, he signed for $500,000 in 2014. You know, kind of another classic 6'1", toolsy shortstop. Put up good numbers this year in the in rookie ball. Hit 340 with an 886 OPS. And, you know, excellent bat speed, all these classic toolsy guys that get the money, great bat speed. Who knows if the tools come together, but if they do, he could develop a number of different positive ways or negative ways, but yeah, worthy of mention. Is there, you want to close it out? What do you want to, how do you want to finish?
I think I just figured out what our t-shirt is. Bad speed, get the money. Bad speed, get the money.
Wait, did we mention the t-shirt? On the podcast or when before the podcast?
No, we have. And by the way, I want to give a big shout out to Blue Jays Mike, your wife. What's up? I know you hate us because we have funky accents and we're from Massachusetts and New York. And I'm sorry. Thank you for letting your husband listen to this podcast. I really appreciate it. Now he's not going to be able to listen to it at all any longer. He said that she's always like, can you turn that off? Because these two guys annoy the crap out of me. so I just lost another listener. One guy I want to mention who's going to be a decent pen arm, somebody you should look into, that's a man named Joan. That would be Joan Gregorio, big 6'7", righty, got a really funky delivery. He's got some funk, you know, on the fastball, throws a slider, doesn't have a changeup at all. He's a two-pitch guy. I think he's totally a bullpen piece, but could be a really interesting bullpen piece. Especially there in San Francisco, where I think they're going to be looking for a few arms to fill out that bullpen. So one to keep on your radar. And then another one is Steven Duggar, who was a sixth-round pick in the 2015 draft. I was calling him poor man's Adam Eaton because he doesn't have a ton of power. He's got speed, but he doesn't run as well as he probably should. He's a really good defensive player up the middle. And he's got a good hit tool, you know. So I call them barely Eaton because he's a poor man's Adam Eaton. So I kind of looked at him
as a poor man's Brian Reynolds, even though he strikes out a little bit. Dugar strikes out a little bit.
He's got 80 grade speed. Reynolds can't run like that.
Dugar's 80 grade speed?
Yeah, man. He's like off the charts in terms of what his speed is. He's just not a great. He hasn't been a.
He has caught a lot.
He's been getting caught a lot. They said his jumps aren't great, so he needs to work on that. But he's got big speed in the outfield, which is something Reynolds doesn't necessarily have. But yeah, he
Reynolds
strikes out
quick.
A little bit.
Reynolds is pretty quick. Reynolds got some speed.
I don't know. I don't know if he's got speed like this guy. Like, this,
no, no, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure.
Like
he
a, I'm sure. Like straight athletic.
You know, I'm just more focused on stolen base totals. But guys that fast, he gets caught that much, and he's not that young. I don't know. No, all right, he's got some work to do.
He's got some work to do, but I know that there's some people think he has some projection left you know, just as a player on the base pass, and he's got a decent hit tool, so yeah. he's very deep league. I mean, he's somebody you're only thinking about in a 30-team league.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Thanks for making the Razzball Prospect Podcast the number one niche, fantasy baseball prospect podcast on iTunes, I guess, if we take Ray's word for it. I don't know how to do those rankings. And maybe you'll see some of the Dynasty Guru stuff with us or not. I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see how that call goes on Saturday.
Sunday.
On Sunday?
We moved to Sunday.
Are you gonna let me in that call, Ralph, or is that a secret call?
Yeah, I'm going to be – it's 10 a.m. on a Sunday, so it should be about the time that I'm starting to get drunk as I'm starting to get ready for the Super Bowl and the Patriots. It's the only thing I could think about. I couldn't do any work at all today. All I could just think about was Sunday at 6:15 or whatever, 6:30. So yeah. Let's go.
All right, so as you know, our closing. I'm Michael Halpern. Check out my stuff, imaginarybrickwall.com. I'm in the middle of my top 200 still. I should finish that off next week, hopefully. Find me on Twitter. And that's it. Just keep up with my shit, you know, and listen to the podcast.
Yeah, this is Ralph Lifshitz, razzball.com. You know that I post over there on Wednesdays and Sundays. The podcast drops on Saturday. I'm going to try to maybe throw a few more posts in this week. You can follow me on Twitter and all of my crazy musings, especially if you want to see a crazy, angry, or happy, or confrontational Patriots fan during the Super Bowl. Follow me at Ralph Lifshitz, BB. That's LIFSHITZ, BB. Check out my videos over on Nickel Press with the very talented Andy Singleton. Those are dropping on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. We do three hitters, three pitchers, three prospects. Very redraft focused. So that's where I get to get my all my redraft opinions and ideas out and share those with the world. Please check those out. Please subscribe. Please subscribe to this podcast. Thank you, everybody. It's an exciting time. I don't know. It is.